This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the Westminster parliamentary system, a backbencher is a rank-and-file MP who, in parliament, do not hold any cabinet post, nor is a front bench of the opposition. And since backbenchers in the parliament form the vast majority of MPs in the House, they can form a caucus that can sometimes exercise considerable power in getting laws passed. In the studio with me is a veteran in Malaysian politics, Tan Sri Shahrir Abdul Samad. He is the chairman of the Barisan Nasional Backbenchers Club, or BN. BBC, and also the MP for my hometown, Johor Bahru. Welcome to the show, Tan Sri. Welcome to the show, Tan Sri.
Thank you.
So if you have any questions for Yang Berhormat Tan Sri Shahrir, you can text us at 016-201-9000 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Also, for a first, we are broadcasting this interview live on Facebook. You can just go to BFM Radio's Facebook page and watch us having, you know, two local Johor boys having a good chat about the economies or the political system of the country. So Tan Sri, let's start off with the first question. You kind of threw in that big whammer saying that you are going to resign in politics. In fact, if I can quote you, when you were asked whether or not you'll contest in the next general election, you said, hopefully not. what brought into your decision on quitting from politics?
Well, I think we all have certain visions or certain ideas about our lives and the organizations we belong to. I've been in politics since I was 23 years old. I think it's quite a long time. I've had two phases or three phases of my own political life. I was in government in the first phase, starting from political secretary, parliamentary secretary, MP and parliamentary secretary, right up to being minister. And then I took a three-term break, 15 years of it. And now I'm into my second phase, which I actually quite clearly wanted to say that I didn't want to be a minister and I would like to be a backbencher, an ordinary member of parliament. And I think after six terms in parliament or a combined total of 40 over years in politics, 47 years in politics, I feel strongly that rejuvenation and also introducing new blood into the system should be something I should do, because that's how I got into politics in the first place. I was 23. I was offered to be a political secretary just on the basis that, you know, the party should get new blood. We should train them. Should early. And then introduce them into the system, right?
Yeah, so this is the biggest contention right now. Do you feel that that very nature of passing over the baton to the younger generation in Malaysian politics is no longer there?
No, it is. I don't think so, except that I pride myself on being able to say, okay, having a sort of a systematic sort of development where my former political secretary, who's now the Menteri Besar of Johor.
Yeah. So while your track record is there, in fact, I quote you, your track record is clear. My former political secretary is now the Menteri Besar. I'm talking about UMNO in general.
You mean I'm repeating
myself? No, UMNO in general. You know, Dr. Mahathir is still around, still making extremely vocal comments on Najib Razak.
That's politics. That's national politics. It's not UMNO politics.
All right. Do you think that, you know, politics in general is not passing over the baton over to the younger guys?
Certainly, you can see how many prime ministers we've had, right? There was, of course, a time when it's sort of, where I would even say that, you know, you have the same players, except that the scripts are changing.
Yeah.
For example, now you still have Tun Dr. Mahathir making his comments, making his moves. Dollar Badawi, of course, is quiet, but Najib has been part of the system for many years. Well, he started very young, and now he's prime minister. And you do see new faces, and that's a good sign, because I don't think that everybody who's in cabinet has been in politics for 50 years. I mean, they are reasonably new and young. I mean, new in a sense. most of the ministers I knew. So, and at every opportunity, the leadership tries to introduce new people and young people.
Now,
they may not be young, but they're certainly new.
Okay, so this is the whole point. Getting the young to be in politics is something of an extraordinary measure in today's day and age. You started off your career in your early 20s, in your political career. In fact, being the political secretary to illustrious names, including political secretary to Tun Dr. Ismail, to Tun Musi Hitam, to Tun Razak, to Tun Hussein On, all of them deputy prime ministers or prime ministers in their own right. Can you imagine seeing a 24-year-old Malaysian becoming a political secretary to the deputy prime minister? It just doesn't happen today.
I think there are a couple of young people, but the rule of politics is I think the golden rule of politics, that politics is local. So you need, if you want to come into politics and be introduced into politics, the first thing you, that your mentor has to do is to assign you a place, your kampong or your place where you can be, become the local man. I was chosen to be political secretary to Musa Hitam on the basis that I'm a Johorian, right? This is also very parochial, local basis to that decision. So politics in anywhere, I think in the world, anywhere in the world, has to start from the basis that politics is local. So if you want to have someone to be introduced at a young age, you cannot just assume for him to say, oh, you're bright, you're very good, and then we will put you somewhere, right? It is not quite like some developed countries, for example, where you can do it. But here, I think in Malaysia, politics is still very much local. You have to be known by the local people, or at least the local party machinery is willing to accept you. You know, and then that's how you start.
So, Tan Sri, I think right now the political parties are being exceptionally strategic in trying to deploy young faces. DAP is focused on urban Chinese. PKR is focusing on urban in general. UMNO is now shifting away from the urban areas and now moving towards sub-rural and rural areas. Is this a fair kind of allocation for the people of Malaysia? Do you think that, you know, political parties should just brave it anyway? UMNO should be in urban areas despite the resistance that they face. So DAP must enter the rural areas despite the resistance that they may face.
I think we are all welcome. You know? I think there's no barriers at all, right? No barriers at all to where you want to where you want to have your political activities. But of course, certainly, a lot of it has to do with what people perceive you to be, right? And what people perceive you to be is because of your past track record, is because of what you do and how your current stance is, what issues you take on. And there is no substitute for being there on the ground, you know, because Johor Bahru in particular is very urban, although it's suburban to the city centre, but you know Johor Bahru. Johor Bahru is a really small commercial district. The rest is all residential areas.
Yeah.
So there is no restriction for DAP or for PAS or for UMNO to just stay where to stay only and to subdivide the country according to their own preferences. I mean, you can enter and you can try, but you have to have really be sure. And is that what your ideology is about, right? Because the thing about UMNO is people, number one, may not want to talk about their ideology, but obviously UMNO is a conservative party, mm-hmm. you know, and conservative movements anywhere in the world is much more, you know, whether you are Republican or whether you're the Conservative Party in the UK, is where your ideology and your position on issues.
All right, Tan Sri, I'm speaking to Tan Sri Shahri Abdul Samad, chairman of the BNBBC, BN Backbenchers. He's on the Big First Deal this morning. Tan Sri, do you believe that race-based politics is dead? DAP is predominantly Chinese-based. UMNO is, of course, a Malay-based party. Do you think that a multicultural party is the way to the future for Malaysia?
I think you can't run away from all the, you know, the multicultural, multi religious sort of multiracial makeup of this country, right? Essentially, is how do we work it out? How do we get together and work it out? Do you do the BN style of power sharing, all right? Or do you you try to say we'll go multicultural, multiracial from the word go? And or do you adjust as you go along, right? Sometimes if you try to do multiracial from the word go, you may not be as, you might not be seen as really as a sincere attempt. Mm-hmm. So you know that you can't have, you people do not really integrate as much, yeah. Right?
But this is your assumption. We saw in Sarawak where you have direct BN candidates directly voting, the flag, the Dutching, as opposed to...
But there was a political solution, right? It's not a sort of multiracial approach. Is this a...
Yeah. So you've been in politics since the 1970s. It's 2016 now. Do you think that in the future you're going to be able to see that direct voting candidate straight to BN?
It will take a while for this reform to come about. The response, the situation in Sarawak was a response to a particular situation, and that was the solution. You have a direct BN candidate. And not from the parties. But for parties to become multiracial, multicultural, and multireligious, and to accept everybody on the basis of your Malaysian citizen, it's already happening, even in UMNO, all right? Where the moment UMNO went into Sabah, we have to contend with the fact that they are much more assimilated, much more integrated, and they can join in UMNO, even though they are not Muslim, but as long as they are just Bumiputras. And I think that is how it happens. Because in the end, we hope to. I think we can only hope for, say, an ideological-based party, is as opposed to a racial-based party. Is when we come to recognize for what we are in politics.
Which is Malaysians?
No. Malaysians, but ideologically, recognize the ideology that you have. And political ideology.
And what would be that ideal political ideology that you envision?
I think the point is that you must have, you must recognize what is the ideology. You cannot just be, okay for everything, right? As I said, UMNO is a conservative party. And conservatism is a political ideology.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The opposition have clear slogans. Malaysian Malaysia, one Malaysia.
What does it mean?
It means everybody's born equal and everybody doesn't have the supersede.
Yeah, you may have the slogans, but that may not be your ideology. Because your ideology, as say for a DAP, they say they are socialist, democratic socialism or whatever, But yet in essence, they're not. So the people say they are still racial, and they come up with slogans, Malaysians for Malaysia, and so on and so forth. So it confuses everybody. So if why we see in other countries, in other communities, or in other nations that the political parties are not racial based, it's because they are ideology based. But then also because if the ideological status or situation is very clear, then whether you're Malay, Indian or Chinese or Kadazan or Iban doesn't matter, as long as you subscribe to that particular ideology.
One of the questions and comments that came from Twitter is that you are rather reasoned and thoughtful as an MP, and you would have made a great Prime Minister. Now this is interesting because the last cabinet post you held was in the mid-80s, and after that, in the late 80s, you just dropped off. The last post you had was Minister of Welfare, 1985-1987. Did you have a fallout with Tun Mahathir?
Good question. I give you an answer. I think, the last post in Tun Dr. Mahathir's cabinet was Minister of Welfare. And as I recall, normally is a place where you send to be fried in your own... just in your own oil or whatever they used to fry, like being grilled here, I was part of Team B, and at that time I was moved to welfare because Tun Musa had resigned as Deputy Prime Minister, so obviously I was on the way out, as indicated, but it didn't matter. My last cabinet post was domestic trade, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I thought it was an economics ministry. It was not performing its role as an economics ministry. I think I successfully turned it into an economics ministry.
Yeah. So, Tan Sri, you have been known as a person that goes against the grain of the UMNO leadership. You fell out from Team A, who actually created UMNO Baru, and later on went on to have that strong dominion over UMNO, what we saw today. You saw that you resigned as the BNBBC in 2005 when pushing through a bill that was not quite,
It wasn't a bill.
It wasn't a bill. Okay.
It was a motion.
It was a motion. So yeah. So you resigned then as well. And now it seems that you're resigning. People are looking at you as a person that is willing to rile up the vast majority of the MPs against the cabinet, against the government. While the opposition bench is, I would say, in tatters currently because they don't have a strong coalition, people are looking towards BNBBC to be that voice of the conscience of the people. Do you think that you've done them justice in being the voice of the conscience of the people against the government?
I think we have to be quite clear, right, that each member of parliament have their own conscience. We have the political party system, which is also important, because, as I said, as I go back to what I said, is the fact that a party should have an ideology, whether you know it or not, whether you claim you claim it or not. So the essence of being a backbencher is that you provide the alternative views to what government has. They would discuss bills with us, they would discuss motions with us, they would discuss the program with us. And we would be having our own opinions on certain things.
Okay, we'll get to that discussion on bills enactment shortly. But there's one question from Azrin Danyan. He has asked, has there ever been a vote where MPs have been able to vote with their conscience?
We've never had a conscience vote. Neither government nor opposition.
Can we then assume that our MPs have no conscience?
Everyone. Their conscience would have to be certainly on issues which are very significant, and then you may have to have a conscience vote, because essentially if we come up to the, for example, at one point of time we're discussing the Hudud Bill,
yes.
How is it going to, how are the MPs going to respond? Now, then at that particular time, there was an issue of whether people will vote with conscience or whether it will be a vote of conscience or not.
Right. So speaking about a vote of conscience, and since you mentioned Hudud Bill, let's talk about Hadi's Bill, which is the nickname for the private member's bill on Sharia Court amendments. Tan Sri, what does it mean when a minister of the federal government, namely Dato' Azlina, a fellow Johorian MP, like yourself, supported the mention of the bill?
It's not supporting the bill as much as moving it up towards in the order paper.
Okay.
So there was this decision taken that it be moved up after all the government business is done, then the bill would be Hadi's private member's bill would be the first order of business.
Yeah, but doesn't that mean that the federal minister of the federal government is in cahoots with Hadi?
No, but there's nobody else who can move who can move the order of in the order paper.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not talking about the powers of moving up and down. I'm
you
saying
can't, you can't move it otherwise. A minister has to do the motion, and I think, of course, whether you are in cahoots or not, but there's agreement. Cahoots may be a large, big, emotive word, but obviously, and I think nobody can deny it, that the caucus or the cabinet had agreed. The government had agreed for the bill to be placed immediately after the finish of government business.
Right, let's talk about MPs with conscience, because I presume you would be one of the rare MPs that do. I had Senator Ashraf Wajdi here, right there where you sat, and asked him point blank whether or not UMNO supported Hudud. Right. And he says that UMNO has never went against Hudud, but there's so many bills that needs to be enacted first before we get to Hudud. Mm. What's your position on Hudud?
Yeah, I think as far as this country is concerned, Islam is under the leadership of the Sultan. Every state would have to make their own decision, because Islam is a state matter, religion is a state matter, and it falls directly under the Sultan, each Sultan. And they would have to be that decision at that particular level for each particular state. In the case of Kelantan, assent, the royal assent for the amendment to the bill, for their bill in State Assembly was already obtained.
Yeah.
So I mean, so if we understand the way the Federation of Malaya or Malaysia is conceived, the power over religion, especially Islam, is under the Sultan of his state.
Yeah.
So that's then you have to go right to the top again.
Right. So, which is quite interesting. So let's move on to the Sultan's powers in the country, namely Johor Bahru. Johor Bahru is undergoing a massive transformation right now. It's not the same as I grew up back in the day. We have Nusa Jaya, where it's becoming a finance, educational, medical, entertainment. You have Senai, you have Tanjung Langsat, Pasir Gudang, Tanjung Pelepas, the CBD area of Johor Bahru itself. Did you play a major role in the economic development of Johor Bahru?
Oh, I don't think I would be able to do that. I think my duties would be, my responsibilities would be, I think, is how to allow for the people, right? And I really mean people. I mean, the residents of Johor Bahru, the local population, how they can feel not marginalized, right? Not feel as though they are not part of the development. So I do not get myself involved in development per se, because I think my real interest is to make sure that whatever the development plans that are being planned are laid out, the residents, the people of Johor Bahru, especially those in Johor Bahru constituency, do not feel out of touch, out of place, displaced, marginalized by what's happening. I think okay. That's my role. So my contribution to development plans would be input towards that end.
So speaking about roles in economic development, the Sultan of Johor is pretty entrenched in the development of the Johor state. In fact, he was quoted by the Straits Times in Singapore saying that he believed it is healthy for royalty to be involved in proper and legitimate businesses because he cannot rely on a monthly allowance a month. Do you agree with these kind of statements? Do you think that Tuanku's involvement in business can be good for the people?
Well, there have been many sultans that we've had in Johor. His father, for example, the late sultan, was not involved in business except for his own, which is he had a business, which was the palm oil business, Mados, and that was the only business that he was involved in. As far as the present sultan, then taking upon what his father had been involved in, then he's expanded into other forms of business. It's as long as I suppose there's not present any conflict in terms of present problems and conflict, and it's also within the rules and the laws of the state and the local authority. I think anyone is free to do business.
Yeah, okay. So what about the influence of his son, the Tunku Magoto of Johor?
Oh, excellent. I think his influence is fantastic.
So he has been making some interesting calls about the state of Johor in the Constitution and the Federation. Would you like to care for comment on that?
I think people are, including royalty, can make statements. Anybody make all sorts of statements. People do make all sorts of statements in the social media. And I suppose it's a matter of time to see whether it is really serious or really determined. Then when you are determined about in what you want to achieve, then there'll be a time when people have to take their own positions.
Tan Sri, there was a question from Eliana asking a very simple one. Has there been a simple law where you resonated very well and that you actually pushed through as your role in the Backbenchers Club?
A simple law which resonates very well with me. Well, I mean, I would to think about it.
Yeah.
What exactly? Because, pardon me, my memory is not as good.
But it comes with age.
It does come with age. That's why I'm going.
Okay, so let's refresh in your memory right now. There's a big topic on pedophilia cases.
Yeah, that's true.
We just heard over the bulletin about 5 minutes ago that there was a pedophilia case. Mm. I had Senator Nancy Shukri here. Sorry, YB Nancy Shukri, Batang Sadong MP, and I asked her what is her position on enacting greater protection laws for children. And she mentioned Child Act is already there. However, I'd like to dispute that, saying that Child Act is not enough for protecting children. What's your view on having better laws to protect our children?
I mean, laws are one thing, but that I really believe, you know, I really believe in the strength of the community. You know, it is. While you put everything in law, then you have to start the enforcement part, right? Sure, you know, we should have all the necessary laws to provide protection for any particular group of people.
Right. Has there been any act or statutes that have been successfully influenced and decided by the Backbenchers Club?
We were concerned. In the recent one, we were very concerned about putting ketum, for example, how to control and regulate the use of ketum, particularly at a time when people do have in the rural areas to have ketum trees, and at the same time it is also being seen as a possible drug, you know, and so there was some hesitation on our part to allow it to be classified as a poison. So we need to discuss and with the government side, and this is the most immediate example. But in the past we had discussions with the leadership as to whether we should be allowances should be raised. We were not quite happy at a particular time. You won't believe this. But at a time when...
Actually, it's easy to believe that people are not happy with their salary. That happens everywhere.
But we actually didn't want our salaries, our allowances to be raised at that particular time. And we did tell the Prime Minister, no, you know, we don't want it to be increased as yet. And this was during Tun Abdul Ahmad Badawi's time. But he sort of had to use the stick on us, you know, and we had to relent.
Yeah. So in a modern and mature Westminster-style parliamentary system, you have caucuses. You have caucuses that crosses borders, aisles, parties, ideologies, even gender and race. Do you see this happening in the country?
You know, we are not quite the modern Westminster parliamentary form that we have, that we talk about. Because in the parliamentary, in other parliaments, we have the parliamentary party, right? In the UK, we have the parliamentary party. In Australia, we have the parliamentary party. In America, United States of America, they have a separation between leadership of the government and leadership of the party.
Yeah. So being around for 40 years in the parliament with a gap of about 3 terms, did you fail in this?
No, I think it will take a long while for such a parliamentary party system to even come to fruition.
Tansri, with all due respect, I haven't been around in the 1970s and it's still the same. 2016 parliament is the same as 1970s parliament when you first served Dr. Ismail. Does it mean that we have to wait another 5 years for this to happen?
We don't know. I don't know whether we can ever have a parliamentary party system, because how do you... can we move from, say, leadership of the party being separated from leadership of the government, right? Is the closest we have is perhaps in Sarawak, where the members of parliament are not leaders of their respective parties at the constituency level. So they're attached, but they're not part of the state party system.
Yeah, so we see this in the US as well, where the leadership in the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, they don't normally hold public offices.
That's right.
And now we see that in Sarawak. Do you think this is the time for Malaysia to actually embrace this?
Embracing requires, a lot of conditions for it to happen.
Tan Sri, you sound like a man defeated in your purpose. Do you think that all of us should share the same sentiment, or is there hope for change?
What do you mean that it is essential for that change to happen? I mean, for it to happen, or you make the best of the system that's there? You know, because I make the best of what's given to me, rather than say, oh, I want it my way, you know, and no other way. I mean, you may not get things done your way at all, you know, because I take.
But you have resigned a few times when it didn't get your way.
Yeah, it does not matter to me to occupy a position, because I think particularly in the third phase of my politics, you know, I think when I'm just an honorary member of parliament, I think that whatever I do, you know, the most important is that I should be able to contribute. And by resigning, I also contribute to the dialogue and discussion on what the backbenchers should be, right? I think we have to move on. And I think this particular phase of my political life is I want to get members of parliament to realize that not being a cabinet minister, not being a deputy minister, doesn't mean that you cannot perform and serve as a member of parliament.
So, okay, speaking of which, we're going to get two new MPs by the time we reach the mid-month this month. And I'm talking about the by-elections in Sungai Besar as well as Kuala Langsa. We saw that there's a lot of candidates being thrown into the ring. Amanah, PAS, independent candidates are now throwing their names. But if history has shown us one thing, when there's more than a three-quarter fight, BN will win. Do you think BN will win in this election?
I think they have a good reason to win. There's a fair chance to win. You will still be the voters' decision.
Yeah. Right?
In the end of the day, you know, when you have to refer it to the voters and refer it to the people, that would be is a good way. I mean, it's a good thing. And I think we're now referring to the voters. Anybody can contest. I mean, the best thing would have been for Sungai Besar is, for example, in Selangor, is if everybody listened to Azmin, right, the MB of Selangor. I think he had something up there. He could have put a good candidate. But Azmin did not have to say, oh, it should be PKR. I think he should have just listened to Tun Dr. Mahathir and supported PAS, you know, the PAS candidate. Then it will be a one-to-one fight.
Yeah, but it's not PKR that's fielding the candidates. Amanah. Yeah, speaking of Amanah.
Why can't Amanah listen to PKR?
So let's ask this question directly back to you. You have a brother. You have a brother.
You only got 2 minutes left.
Tak apa, 2 minutes cukup. You have a brother, the Shah Alam MP, Syaril Samad.
Khalid Samad. I'm Syaril Samad.
Yes. Very sorry about that.
You're getting
everything confused. So why didn't YB Khalid actually argue for the non-BN guys to rally against BN in terms of putting a straight fight?
So who does he listen to? Who does Amanah listen to? You know, I imagine if you have started out on this collision of opposition parties on the basis that it's to be one-to-one, right? That you have a two-party system. There was the promise that they were giving it to the voters and the people in the last election, right? Why didn't they stick to it? Why did Amanah not listen to PKR? Azmin Ali, for example, as Menteri Besar, yeah? He's the leader of the government. He's obviously not the political leader in Selangor. So I would have imagined that Azmin, with all his positions and his capabilities, would have been able to force a one-to-one fight, you know, and that would be then that's exactly what Harapan Pakatan Rakyat had promised to the population, to the people. Pakatan Harapan should continue that it should be towards a two-party system, a viable two-party system where a collision of parties under BN versus a coalition of parties together, DAP, PKR, and Amanah.
You know, this by-election is a bellwether of or an indicator of an election that is coming up in about one and a half years.
I don't think any event today is an indicator of anything that's going to happen 2 years from now.
So, Tan Sri, we're approaching the end of our interview. You started off your career with Tun Dr. Ismail, and now you're ending your career with Prime Minister Najib Razak. How has the 50-odd years treated you in politics?
Well, I've got white hair.
Are you hopeful for the future?
Oh, yes. I think Malaysia has enough contradictions to make sure that we move forward.
Okay. You with know? That note, I've been speaking to Tan Sri Shahri Abdul Samad, the chairman of the BN Backbenchers Club, also Johor Bahru MP, my hometown. He was on the Breakfast Grill this morning. Tan Sri, thanks for being on the grill.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm Ibrahim Sani for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.